Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Thomas Keegan, Gregory Gorton, Bradley Smith, Eva Wilhelm, Kimberly Gilbert, Thomas Penny, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Richard Rowan, Ren Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Nick DePinto, Michael John Casey, Joe Brack, Ken Jackson, and Nanette Savard. The Loner, Book 6, 7 Days to Die. The man who had once been Conrad Browning leaned forward to stir the little fire in front of him, careful not to look directly into the flames as he did so. That could ruin a man's night vision. Not being able to see well if danger threatened could ruin a man's life. It could end it, in fact. The man, now known as Kid Morgan, settled back on the flat rock he was using as a seat and listened to the wolf sing its solitary song. He felt a bond of kinship with the beast. The wolf was probably a loner, too. At least the kid liked to think that was the case. But maybe it wasn't true. Maybe the wolf had a mate. The kid's mouth tightened into a thin line. He shook his head. Couldn't be. The wails directed at the night sky had such a mournful sound to them, he knew the creature must have experienced pain and loss. Like him.
Stop feeling sorry for yourself.
He reached for the coffee pot, using a piece of leather to protect his hand as he grasped its handle. He wasn't sure if he was talking to himself or the wolf.
It's been a year. A year.
In some ways, it seemed much longer than that. In others, only the blink of an eye, since he'd been a happily married, successful businessman with a beautiful wife he adored. Now he was a wanderer, a man with no home and a new name, not the one he'd been born with. Tragically, his wife Rebel had died at the hands of evil men. Conrad Browning had died in the crucible of that tragedy, and from the ashes had risen Kid Morgan, the gunfighter, the avenger, the man who rode alone. In the months since then, he had settled the score with the people responsible for Rebel's death, and although he had drawn no satisfaction from his actions, the knowledge that justice had been done had eased some of his nightmares. It was bleak comfort, but better than nothing. Once that grim chore was done, the kid had wanted only to be left alone, but trouble kept drawing him in. There were people who needed help, and he hadn't been able to turn his back on them. Once he would have, without a second thought, but after being married to Rebel and forming a friendship with his long-estranged father, Frank Morgan, he no longer possessed the smug, self-righteous callousness that had plagued him while he was growing up. Despite his desire for solitude, when he saw innocent people being threatened or taken advantage of, he had to take a hand. In those moments, he knew what it was like to make contact with another human being again. In recent weeks, he had wanted to put away the grief for a while, to reach out and smile and laugh and be happy, even if only for a few minutes. He couldn't allow that. When somebody died, people talked about a suitable period of mourning. Well, for him, a suitable period was the rest of his life. Out of respect for what he'd lost, the grief could never go away. That's why he was sitting in that isolated camp in the rugged mountains of New Mexico territory. As far as he knew, he was the only human being within a dozen miles or more, and that was just the way he wanted it. He sipped his coffee. He'd already eaten a scanty meal of biscuits and jerky. His plan was to nurse the cup of coffee for a little while before turning in. The kid noticed his horse and knew it was a sign of danger. Moving with the smooth, efficient grace of a panther, he stood and set the cup on the rock. He reached down and picked up his Winchester from the ground where he'd placed it next to the bedroll he'd already spread out. As quietly as he could, he slid into the brush, leaving the tiny fire crackling behind him. The buckskin had scented another horse. Fine, thought the kid. If somebody was out there in the darkness, he wanted to draw them in, making them easier to deal with. He wore a black hat, black coat, black trousers, and boots, helping him blend into the shadows. He waited patiently. Time stretched out, but time didn't have much meaning for him anymore. He didn't have anywhere he had to be at any particular time. He didn't have anywhere he had to be, period. No one he knew would be looking for him. Conrad Browning's lawyers were aware that he was alive, but they didn't know where he was. They ran the businesses and banked the profits, and that was the way it would be for the foreseeable future. Frank Morgan knew too, but Frank was even more of a drifter than his son. People called him the Drifter, in fact. He was one of the last truly fast guns. He was off somewhere doing whatever it was he did. He had made it clear the last time he and the kid saw each other that he would respect his son's desire for privacy. So whoever was skulking around, it wasn't a friend of his. It might not necessarily be an enemy, but he was going to assume the worst until he learned otherwise. After a few more minutes, he heard someone approaching.
He is around here somewhere, I tell you. Cotton lives in his fire.
So there was more than one of them. And they were looking for him. They had tracked him by his campfire. He had considered making a cold camp, but didn't think it was necessary. He'd believed he was alone on the mountainside.
Spread out. Luis, over there. Carmel, take the left flank. Murphy, go right. Kennard and I will take the middle.
So there were at least five men searching for him. Or rather, searching for somebody. He didn't think they had reason to be after him, but he'd been mixed up in enough trouble over the past year, he was bound to have left some enemies behind him. Maybe he ought to confront them, demand to know who they were looking for. If it came to a fight, 5-1 odds were pretty steep, but he had faced worse. The kid could see the fire from where he crouched in the brush. The flames had died down to embers, but they still glowed redly. The smell of wood smoke hung in the air, along with the smell of Arbuckle's coffee. It was enough to lead one of the men right to the camp. A moment later, the kid's keen eyes vaguely made out the dark shapes of the others as they converged on the clearing and stepped out into the open.
He was here.
He's still here, somewhere. His horse is unsaddled and hobbled right over there. He can't be far off. We'll spread out and look for him.
Hey, where'd Haggerty go? Who gives a damn about Haggerty? If he wandered off, that means there'll be one less of us with a claim on that reward money, don't it?
Yeah, you're right, Deke. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Reward? What was going on? There was no reward on the kid's head, at least not as far as he knew. He had broken plenty of laws. In fact, he had killed men in cold blood, but he had never been charged with anything. These manhunters had the wrong man. Maybe he ought to step out and tell them that, he thought. But would they believe him? Or would they just start shooting and ask questions later? He decided to lie low and wait them out. If they spread out like their leader had said, he might be able to jump them one at a time and put them out of action. He didn't want to kill anybody unless he had to, but he would defend himself. Once again, the man in charge, Deke, that was his name, separated the others. They moved off, heading up the heavily forested hillside. One of them moved straight toward the spot where the kid waited in the brush. With infinite patience, the kid remained motionless. The searcher was going to pass just to his right. Silently, he lifted the Winchester, waited until the man stepped past him, and slammed the rifle butt against the back of the man's neck. The man dropped like a rock, out cold. He'd never had a chance to cry out. He hadn't made much noise falling down, but it was enough to alert one of the other men. He turned and bounded through the brush toward the kid.
Harpo, you all right?
There was no time to do anything except confront the man. The kid used the Winchester again, whipping the stock around so it smashed across the man's jaw. He went down hard.
Over there! Hargrove and Murphy must have cornered him.
Things were about to get worse, but at least the kid had whittled down the odds a little.
Don't kill him! They want him alive!
They? Who were they?
Ah!
The kid kid didn't have time to ponder that as one of the men charged him. He went low, thrust out a booted foot, and his legs swept the man's legs out from under him. The man plunged headfirst into a pine tree. The man didn't get up, didn't even move.
Hargrove, Murphy, Lewis, answer me, damn it!
Deke, I don't like this. You know what he's like. He might have killed all of them by now.
Shut up! There's five of us and only one of him.
There was five of us. You heard. They didn't answer.
The two men were to the kid's right. He circled behind them as they cast back and forth, looking for their companions and the man they were hunting. The kid thought it was pathetic. They weren't professional manhunters, that was for sure. Probably cowboys whose heads had been filled up with the thought of getting their hands on some reward money. He didn't want to hurt them, but he knew they were dangerous. They would spook easily and start shooting again, and a bullet didn't care who pulled the trigger. They might actually spray enough lead around to hit him by accident. He moved up in the shadows behind one of the men, drew his Colt, and pressed the revolver's barrel against a suddenly stiffening back.
Don't move, mister, or I'll blow your spine in two.
Oh my God, Deke! He's got me, Deke!
I didn't tell you to yell, Kennard.
You know who I am?
Yeah. And if you don't get the hell off this mountain and take your friends with you, I'll show up some night when you don't know I'm anywhere around. You know what'll happen then, don't you, Kennard?
Maybe.
Drop your guns. I want to hear them hit the ground.
Deke! You better come up here where I can see you, Deke, or I'll kill your partner!
Well, take it easy. There's no need for anybody to die.
Then why'd you come up here hunting me? I said drop your guns. You too, Deke. Step out where I can see and get those guns on the ground.
You gotta do what he says, Deke! He knows who we are, damn it!
Deke stepped into the open. He put his rifle on the ground, drew a revolver from a holster at his waist, and dropped it as well. Kennard threw his rifle down and fumbled his gun from its holster.
That's it. We're disarmed.
No hideout guns?
No, I swear.
Deke, sit down next to that tree. Kennard, take your belt off and use it to tie him to the trunk.
What? What are you gonna do to me?
I'll kill you if you don't do what I tell you.
Deke sat down where the kid ordered. Kennard lashed him securely to the narrow trunk of a fairly small pine.
What about me?
Turn around.
Oh, God. Oh, no, mister. Please don't kill me. Please, you can't.
The kid hit Kennard over the back of the head with the butt of his Colt. Kennard's knees unhinged and dumped him on the ground at Deke's feet.
Your other three men are scattered along the slope here, knocked out. One of them hit his head pretty hard against a tree. Hope he's not hurt too bad.
You made the worst mistake of your life, Bledsoe.
I sort of doubt that, and I'm not...
What felt like a giant fist smashed into his body and drove him forward. He ran into a tree and bounced off. Pain filled the kid and made his head spin crazily. Forcing his eyes open, he saw a pair of booted feet stop right beside him. The man bent over him.
Yeah, you made a mistake, all right. You just didn't know it. Turned your back on me.
Haggerty! Haggerty! You got him! Let me loose and we'll get the others and take him in!
And split the reward six ways when I earned it by myself? The hell with that.
You can't collect it if he's dead.
He's not dead. I just creased him. He's stunned now, but he'll live.
You gotta let me loose anyway. You can't just leave us all up here like this.
Get yourself loose. I don't have time for you.
A hand grasped the kid's shoulder, rolled him onto his back.
I've been watching. I knew you were a dangerous man, Bledsoe, but I wasn't sure you could take all five of them like you did. Once I saw that, I knew I couldn't give you a chance.
I'm not...
I'm gonna need you to shut up for a while.
Bledsoe? Who the hell was Bledsoe? The question echoed in the kid's brain as consciousness slowly seeped back into it. Then pain overwhelmed curiosity and he forgot all about Bledsoe. Instead, he fought not to be sick as nausea roiled his stomach. He felt a horrible pounding inside his skull and realized he was hanging head down. That torture was his pulse, he figured out after a moment. It felt like imps from hell banging on the inside of his head with ball-peen hammers. The fire in his side was bad. It hurt like someone had jammed a blazing torch into his body. The swaying and bouncing added to his sickness. He tried to move, hoping to find a more comfortable position. His hands were numb, which meant his wrists were tied together. Eventually, he came to understand that his wrists were also bound to his ankles. Somebody had draped him face down over a saddle and lashed him in place so he couldn't move. Haggerty, that son of a bitch. Suddenly, Haggerty brought both horses to a stop.
So, you're awake again.
Coming loose?
Yeah, like I'm gonna take a chance on cutting bloody Ben Bledsoe loose.
Haggerty?
That's right.
You got the wrong man, you stupid bastard.
Talk like that's not likely to make me want to treat you better, is it? I've seen the picture on all the reward posters. You're Bledsoe, all right.
You're wrong. My name is Morgan.
You can lie all you want to, Bledsoe. No one is going to believe you. Who'd take the word of a murdering outlaw?
Haggerty got the horses moving again. As the kid swayed over the saddle and a fresh wave of dizziness set the world to spinning crazily around him, he realized he was just going to have to bide his time. Surely, sooner or later, Haggerty would deliver him to someone who would realize a terrible mistake had been made. The kid could tell from the light it was early morning. He'd been out cold for most of the night. The light grew brighter and the shadows shorter as the sun climbed in the New Mexico sky. The ride seemed to take an eternity. Finally, Haggerty reined in again.
There it is. Hellgate. You're back home, Bledsoe.
The kid forced his head up and gazed out across a valley. On the far side, backed up against a sheer cliff of what appeared to be solid granite, was a compound of squat stone buildings, surrounded by a high, thick stone wall with guard towers at the front corners. The cliff itself formed the rear wall of the enclosure. In the middle of the cliff was a tunnel opening that reminded the kid of the black, hungry maw of a beast. The resemblance was made even stronger by a pair of heavy, barred gates that looked like teeth. One thought blazed through the kid's mind as he stared at the compound. Once a man was swallowed up by that hole, he would never come out again.
What is that place?
Hellgate Territorial Prison. You know that as well as I do, Bledsoe. It's where they put the worst of the worst, like you.
The kid didn't have the energy to argue with his captor. Actually, he felt somewhat relieved as he lowered his head again. Now that they had reached their destination, somebody at Hellgate Prison was bound to realize he wasn't Bloody Ben Bledsoe, whoever that was. He supposed maybe Haggerty had made an honest mistake in thinking he was an outlaw who had escaped from the prison. It didn't change the fact that once the kid was back on his feet again, he would have a score to settle with the man. Mistake or not, Haggerty would pay for what he'd done. Nobody gunned down Kid Morgan from behind, pistol-whipped him, and got away with it. Haggerty hitched the horses into motion again, leading the kid's buckskin with the kid lashed to the saddle. Though the prison had appeared close in the thin, clear mountain air, they had to travel several miles on horseback to get there. It took a long time to wind down the trail into the valley, cross it, and climb the other side. At last, they came to a pair of massive wooden gates in the stone wall. Guard towers sat on both sides of the entrance. The kid couldn't tilt his head back far enough to see the occupants of the towers.
Is that Bledsoe?
That's right.
Without another word, one of the gates was soon swung open. Haggerty rode in, leading the kid's buckskin. Blue uniformed guards clustered around them, carrying rifles.
Oh, it's Bledsoe, all right. Well, I'd recognize that face anywhere. Pure evil it is.
Don't try anything, Bledsoe. There are a dozen guards surrounding you, and they'd like nothing better than an excuse to settle a score for the two men you killed when you broke out of here.
The kid didn't say anything. He waited and felt a tug on his wrists and ankles as Haggerty used a knife to cut the rope that bound them together. The kid slid out of the saddle onto his feet, but his balance deserted him. He fell, sitting down hard in the dust. His stomach spasmed and he couldn't hold the sickness back any longer. As the retching subsided, he became aware that the men surrounding him were laughing. Haggerty was the one who really had some payback coming. The kid intended to deliver it just as soon as he possibly could. Haggerty wore a long duster and a brown hat. He was big, broad across the shoulders, deep in the chest. He stood a couple inches over 6 feet, which made him slightly taller than the kid. He probably outweighed the kid by 50 pounds. Haggerty reached down. He lifted the kid effortlessly and had no trouble manhandling him toward one of the stone buildings. The kid's wrists were still tied, but his feet were free. Haggerty had cut the bonds around his ankles. Waving lazily in the breeze, the flags of the United States and New Mexico Territory flew on a flagpole in front of the building that was their destination. The kid figured it was the prison's administration building. Trailed by the guards, the kid and Haggerty reached the steps that led up to the administration building's porch.
Are you through being sick? I don't want you throwing up on the warden's boots. He's still got to approve paying me the reward.
I'm all right.
With Haggerty's fingers digging cruelly and painfully into his shoulder, the kid went up the steps. A guard opened the door before they got there. As soon as the kid stepped inside, he noticed that they were in an office with several desks. Men in suits who worked at those desks stood and stared at him. Another man waited in an open doorway on the other side of the room. He was tall and slender and wore a sober black suit and a string tie. Wavy, dark hair receded from a high forehead. The man's face was like a wedge angling back from a prominent nose. A neatly trimmed mustache adorned his upper lip. His eyes were large and had an odd cast to them. He clasped his hands together behind his back and rocked back and forth on his toes.
Haggerty, they told me you were bringing in Bledsoe. I didn't believe it. I didn't think one man would be able to capture such a monster. Bring him in. I'm looking forward to telling him what he has in store for him now that he's back at Hellgate.
No! Can't you see I'm not this fellow Bledsoe, whoever he is?
He's been saying that ever since I nabbed him last night, Warden Fletcher.
Well, we'll soon make him understand that he's not fooling anybody.
Fletcher gave Haggerty a curt nod and stepped back into what was obviously the warden's private office.
Come on, Bledsoe.
Haggerty shoved the kid forward into the room. It was well appointed, with a big desk, several leather armchairs, a map of New Mexico Territory on one wall, and portraits of the president and the territorial governor on the opposite wall. Behind the desk, a window looked out over the compound and the tunnel that had been bored into the cliff. Haggerty dragged a ladder-backed chair from one side of the room and put it directly in front of the desk. A heavy hand on the kid's shoulder forced him down into the chair. The kid sat there while Fletcher went behind the desk and regarded him coolly.
I'll wire Santa Fe that you've been recaptured, Bledsoe. I'm sure that will be welcome news.
You're making a mistake. My name's not Bledsoe. I'm not an escaped prisoner. I've never been here before.
Is that so?
Fletcher came around the desk again to stand in front of the kid. With no warning, his fist lashed out. It crashed into the kid's jaw with a terrific force and knocked him out of the chair. The kid sprawled on the floor.
Haggerty, pick him up.
The kid was back in the chair, still stunned, but able to sit up by himself.
I see dried blood on his head and on his shirt. What happened to him?
Had to shoot him. I was careful just to crease him in the side. It knocked him down, made him lose some blood. I figured he wouldn't feel much like fighting after that, but I gave him a rap on the head with my gun butt, just to be sure.
He's not badly hurt?
No. I cleaned the wound and bandaged it. I can't rule out blood poisoning, but I'm pretty sure he'll live.
Well, we'll have the doctor look him over, just to be sure. I'd hate to have him die before he can be hanged.
No offense, Warden, but I don't think a jury is going to sentence Bledsoe to be hanged.
He killed two of my guards.
I know. But he's also the only one who knows where he stashed all that money he and his gang stole.
I think the murder of two prison guards takes precedence over a bank robbery.
I think so too, Warden. But the men who own those banks have a lot of influence in Santa Fe. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I'd like to see justice done. Why don't you just tell us where that money is, Bledsoe, and save us all a great deal of trouble?
Warden, listen to me. I'm not Bledsoe. I didn't kill any of your men, and I don't know anything about any bank loot.
You're trying that lie on the wrong man, mister. If there's anybody who knows that you're really Bledsoe, it's Jonas Fletcher.
That's right. I'm not likely to forget you, Bledsoe. Not after all the trouble you caused, even before your escape. You didn't really think that shaving off your beard would make you that difficult to recognize, did you? How about it? Things might go a little easier for you if you cooperate.
I can't tell you what I don't know. I'm not Bledsoe.
All right. Suit yourself. You may change your mind after a spell in Hades. We'll take charge of him now, Haggerty. Your job is done.
The laborer is worthy of his hire. Isn't that what the good book says, Warden? I've heard you used to be a preacher.
Don't quote scripture to me. That was a long time ago. Don't worry, Haggerty. When I wire Santa Fe, I'll include the fact that it was you who brought him back to us. You'll have to ride to Santa Fe to collect the reward, though.
I don't care where I have to go, as long as I get paid. You think maybe I could get something to eat before I leave? Maybe some grain and water from a horse?
Dawkins!
One of the men from the outer office stuck his head in the door.
Yes, Warden.
See to it that Mr. Haggerty gets whatever he needs for himself and his mount.
Yes, sir.
What about the horse Bledsoe was riding? I brought him in on it.
You can have it as far as I'm concerned. Count it as a bonus on the reward.
I'll do that. That buckskin looks like a fine piece of horse flesh.
When Haggerty had left the office, two of the rifle-toting guards stepped in to keep an eye on the kid. Fletcher was now sitting behind his desk with a piece of paper in front of him and dipped a pen in an inkwell.
While we're waiting for the doctor, I'll compose the wire that I'll be sending to Santa Fe.
How about sending a wire for me?
Who in God's name, too?
My lawyers in San Francisco. Claudius Turnbuckle and John Stafford. Maybe you've heard of them.
As a matter of fact, I haven't heard of them. But I find it hard to believe that a bloody-handed outlaw like you would have lawyers in San Francisco, Bledsoe.
That's because I'm not Bledsoe. My name is Conrad Browning. I'm a businessman.
A businessman?
Surely you've heard of the New Mexico, Rio Grande, and Oriental Railroad line? It runs from Lordsburg up to a mining town called Ophir. I own it.
You own a railroad?
I own stock in several railroads. Also silver mines, banks, freight companies, a steamship
That's
line.
That's enough. Do you really think I'm crazy enough to believe such claims? What would some sort of business tycoon be doing wandering around such a godforsaken place as these mountains?
I was just trying to get away for a while. I am who I say I am, Warden. And if you'll wire Turnbuckle and Stafford, I can prove it. I'm sure one of them would even come out here and identify me if that's necessary.
I've already identified you. When you first came here, you sat across this desk from me and cursed me and spat on me. You told me that you'd see me dead. Do you think I'm going to forget that, Bledsoe?
Send the wire. Unless you're afraid to. Tell him you have a man here who claims to be Conrad Browning. If I'm lying, what do you have to lose?
My time. And that's something I happen to value. No, I'm not sending any wires for you, Bledsoe.
A stocky man in late middle age came in. A brush of white hair stuck up from his scalp, and he carried a black bag. He was the doctor.
Yeah, sorry it took me a while to get here, Warden. I was down in Hades trying to keep a man from bleeding to death. An altercation among the inmates got out of hand, you know.
Were you successful, Doctor?
Unfortunately, no. You'll have to assign some men to a burial detail.
The doctor set his bag on Fletcher's desk.
Hopefully we'll have more luck with you, young man. I may have to cut that bloody shirt off you. Of course, it doesn't really matter. You'll soon be getting completely different clothing anyway.
The kid sat stoically while the doctor cut the shirt off and unwound the makeshift bandages that had been wrapped tightly around his torso. When the bandages came off, they revealed a puckered, raw-looking furrow in the flesh of the kid's right side.
Not too bad, not too bad. Who tended to this wound when it was fresh?
Tom Haggerty.
It appears that he did an adequate job. I'll just clean the wound again and bandage it properly.
The kid didn't allow any expression to show on his face when he felt the sting of the carbolic acid the doctor used to clean the wound. Nor did he react when the man covered the bullet crease with pads of clean gauze and bound them in place with strips of bandage that he pulled so tight the kid could barely breathe. After that, the doctor examined the gash on the kid's head where Haggerty had pistol-whipped him.
That could use a couple of stitches to close it up. Otherwise, it's going to leave a little scar.
I don't think Bledsoe will be too worried about a scar, Dr. Thurber.
It never hurts for a surgeon to practice his art. With your permission, Warden?
Fletcher made a magnanimous gesture. Thurber cleaned the wound first, then took two stitches to close it with a deft touch that surprised the kid. He wouldn't have guessed the doctor was that skillful. Thurber bandaged the injury, winding a single strip of bandage around the kid's head. Then he took hold of the kid's chin and moved his head to the side.
Nasty-looking bruise starting to come up there on the jaw.
Don't worry about that.
Very well. My services don't seem to be required here any longer. If you need me, though, Warden, don't hesitate to send for me.
Of course, Doctor.
The white-haired medico nodded to Fletcher, picked up his bag, and bustled out of the office.
All right, there's no use postponing this. On your feet, Bledsoe. You're going back to Hades.
I'm not Bledsoe, I tell you. My name is Conrad Browning. Sometimes I'm called Kid Morgan.
Kid Morgan? I've heard of Kid Morgan, Warden. He's some sort of gunfighter. He was mixed up in a big ruckus over in West Texas a while back.
That doesn't mean this man is Kid Morgan. Look at him, Smithson. Doesn't he look like Ben Bledsoe?
Well, yes, sir, he does, I guess. Except for the fact that he doesn't have a beard. But anybody can shave off a beard.
Exactly.
I'm just not sure why a man would claim to be a gunfighter if it wasn't true.
He's trying to save his life. He's grasping at straws. Now, get him on his feet.
Yes, sir.
Take it easy. There's no need for any more rough stuff.
He stood up slowly, keeping his hands in plain sight so they would know he wasn't trying some sort of trick.
There's a full guard detail outside, as I ordered.
Yes, sir, Warden.
Good. I want Bledsoe completely surrounded so no one can get to him. Take him straight to number one.
Yes, sir. Let's go, Bledsoe.
The kid turned toward the door and stopped short because a young woman stood in the doorway, a surprised expression on her beautiful face.
Jillian! What are you doing here? You know you're not supposed to come to my office.
I'm sorry, Father. Mother was asking for you, and I thought you'd want to come as soon as possible. Is this...
Yes! Ben Bledsoe! He's been recaptured.
That's not true, Miss Fletcher. I'm not Bledsoe. My name is Conrad Brown...
A rifle butt slammed into the back of the kid's neck. The blow was a savage one, struck by a second guard and a sharp gesture from the warden. The kid caught a glimpse of the horrified surprise etched on the young woman's face as he fell.
This man is a very dangerous prisoner, Jillian. I want you to go back to our quarters immediately. You know you're never supposed to leave them without a guard accompanying you.
I'm sorry, Father. I just...
The kid managed to lift his head one last time to look at the young woman. She was beautiful. Petite and well-shaped, with two wings of glossy auburn hair framing her face, her deep brown eyes locked with his for a second.
Get him up! Get him out of here!
Strong hands grasped the kid's arms and hauled him upright. Jillian Fletcher stepped back so that the guards could shove the kid through the doorway. The kid shook his head, trying to clear away the cobwebs, but it was no use. He was only half-conscious as the guards took him through the outer office and outside the administration building. More armed men closed in around him. The two who had hold of his arms marched him past the fenced-off barracks, straight toward the mouth of the tunnel. The kid's senses returned to him a little once he was out in the fresh air. He saw two stone walls about 3 feet tall and topped with sandbags another foot or so high. They formed circles about 10 feet in diameter and were 50 feet or so from the tunnel mouth, set to each side of the opening. Inside each circle was a Gatling gun, manned by two guards and pointed at the tunnel. A shudder went through the kid as he thought about what it would be like if both those rapid firers began pouring thousands of rounds through the opening. Nobody inside the tunnel would survive. The guards took the kid between the two Gatling gun emplacements. More blue-uniformed men unlocked the gates and swung one side open a few feet. It took two men to move the massive iron gate.
Everything locked down inside?
Yep, they're all in their holes.
Smithson and his companion manhandled the kid into the tunnel. It was 50 feet wide and 20 feet high with an arched ceiling. The shaft had been bored out of living rock and was braced with thick timbers and vaulted beams. It ran straight into the mountain for 100 yards. Both side walls and the rear wall were lined with heavy wooden doors, each with a small barred window in it. The kid didn't try to count the doors, but there must have been 100 of them. He knew without being told that behind each door was a cell, also hewn out of the rock. In the area of the tunnel closest to the gates were several long tables with benches built onto them. It was where the prisoners took their meals, the kid guessed. The air was smoky, The shaft was lit by dozens of torches thrust into holders attached to the walls. The kid looked up and saw that several ventilation holes had been drilled in the ceiling, but there weren't enough to carry the smoke away efficiently. The dark, brooding stone walls, the flickering red light from the torches, the stench of the smoke. He could see why the tunnel was known as Hades. Anybody who spent much time there would feel like he was doomed, damned to the underworld realm of Satan himself. Some of the doors were open, leading into empty cells. One such door was in the rear wall, as far as it could possibly be from the light of day. The kid realized that was their destination. He twisted his head to look back over his shoulder. The oblong of light that marked the tunnel mouth had shrunk and was growing smaller with every step. They were going to lock him up because they thought he was bloody Ben Bledsoe, whoever that was, and he would never get out of there. Even if they didn't hang him, he would spend the rest of his days in that hellish place, wasting away until he was a mere shadow of himself, a dried-out husk of the man who was both Conrad Browning and Kid Morgan. He fought down the urge to scream and thrash, to do something, anything, to stop them from putting him in that cell. He knew it wouldn't do any good. The guards would beat him into submission and then throw him in there. And he didn't want to give them the satisfaction of seeing him lose his nerve. He was sure if he gave in to what he was feeling, the guards would tell Warden Fletcher that he had broken down. The kid was damned if he was going to let that happen. So he steeled his nerves and stood up straight as they took him to the cell.
Welcome home, Bledsoe.
One of the guards shoved him forward through the opening. He stumbled on the cell's rough stone floor, but managed to stay on his feet. As he swung around, they closed the cell door.
Enjoy your stay!
Turning slowly, he looked at the cell. There was no light. The only illumination came from the reddish glow that filtered in through the small window with iron bars. As his eyes adjusted, he was able to make out his surroundings. The cell was 8 feet wide and 10 feet deep. A narrow canvas bunk with no mattress, only a metal frame, hung from the right-hand wall. A thin, folded blanket lay on the bunk. A small bucket stood in one corner. The kid saw that it had water in it. A larger bucket in another corner was to be used to relieve himself. That was everything in the cell. A place to sleep, a little water to drink, a bucket to answer the call of nature in. Home, sweet home. Kid thought bitterly. He knew if he had to stay in there for very long, he would go mad. The kid turned and looked out through the window and saw the guard named Smithson coming toward him. Smithson had some sort of bundle in his arms. He didn't unlock the door, shoving the bundle between the bars instead. It was a tight fit.
Take your clothes off and put these on. Then pass your clothes back out through the window. Boots, too.
Is this necessary?
It's the rule. You'll learn pretty quick that things go easier around here if you follow the rules, Bledsoe.
The kid picked up the bundle. He saw that it was a pair of gray wool trousers and a gray wool shirt wrapped around a pair of shoes, along with some rough underwear and socks. Smithson pushed something else between the bars.
When you've got the new duds on, snap those leg irons on your ankles.
And if I don't?
Then you don't set foot outside your cell. Nobody does without the leg irons on.
Maybe I like it in here.
You say that now. You won't feel that way after a few days without being able to go up to the mouth of the tunnel so you can see the sun. You'll really feel like you're in Hades. The real thing, I mean.
I know what you mean. I already feel that way.
Then if you know what's good for you, you'll cooperate, Bledsoe.
I don't suppose it would do any good to tell you again that I'm not who you think I am.
I wouldn't know a thing about that. And I don't want to. Now, are you going to put on those clothes?
A few minutes later, he was dressed in the drab, scratchy prison outfit. He pushed his clothing back through the bars, one at a time.
Now the irons.
The kid picked up the shackles and sat down on the bunk. The leg irons would make a decent weapon in a fight. The shackles themselves were heavy enough and had a short but thick length of chain between them. But once they were snapped onto his ankles, they would be useless for anything except forcing him to shuffle along with his steps greatly restricted. That was their intended purpose, of course. Smithson looked through the window.
If you don't put them on, you won't get to come out for chow. You'll have to live on what we can pass you through the bars. You won't get your free time. We can't even clean your slops bucket. We have to see the irons on your ankles before the door is ever unlocked. That's the way it works.
All right, all right. Blast it.
The kid closed the first shackle and then the other around his ankles.
Satisfied?
Don't blame me, Bledsoe. You're the one who robbed all those banks and killed those two guards. They were friends of mine.
In that case, it ought to really bother you that the wrong man is locked up. The son of a bitch who really killed him is still out there somewhere.
One thing I've learned working in prisons, everybody's innocent. It's always a mistake. It was somebody else who robbed and killed. You think anybody on this side of the bars ever believes that?
If I'm lying, what harm could it do for the warden to send that wire I asked him to? If he refuses to do it, maybe it's because he's afraid I'm telling the truth.
You missed midday chow. You'll have to wait until tonight to eat. Sorry.
With that, he was gone. During the long afternoon, the kid watched through the bars and began to get an idea how things worked in Hades. Prisoners were taken out of their cells in groups of six. They were allowed to shuffle around the tunnel with their leg irons clanking, talk to each other, smoke, and go up to the gates so they could look out. The sun didn't shine directly into the tunnel, but at least they could see it splashing its rays over the compound outside. Each prisoner was trailed at all times by a pair of guards armed with rifles, so that when all six inmates congregated together, they were surrounded by a dozen guards. In addition, other guards were stationed here and there around the tunnel and at the entrance. Plus, there were those two Gatling guns guarding the gate. Making a break for freedom seemed almost impossible. More than anything else, it would be a good way to get yourself killed in a hurry. The kid wondered how Bloody Ben Bledsoe had managed to escape. While the prisoners were out of their cells, older prisoners fetched out the slops buckets and emptied them into a barrel mounted on a cart. Another cart carried a water tank used to refill the water buckets. The kid figured the men responsible for those tasks were trustees who lived in the barracks in the compound. Hades seemed to be reserved for the prisoners who were regarded as the most dangerous. After 15 minutes, the men were herded back into their cells and locked up. The process started all over again with the next six prisoners. The kid noticed some of the cells were skipped. The men inside them weren't let out. They were probably being punished for some infraction of Warden Fletcher's rules. The trustees finished the chores by late afternoon. They trundled the carts out of the tunnel once all the prisoners were locked in the cells again. While the gates were still open, men brought in big pots of what smelled like stew and set them on the tables, along with stacks of wooden bowls. They left, and the gates were locked again. The prisoners were let out a dozen at a time. Watched constantly by armed guards, they sat at the tables, picked up the bowls, and dipped them into the pots of stew. They had to eat with their fingers, which they did greedily, licking the last drops of juice out of the bowls. As soon as they finished eating, the guards put them back in their cells. The kid's hands tightened on the bars in the window as he thought about what it would be like to live like that day after day, month after month, year after year. The body might remain alive, but the mind and the spirit would not. They couldn't possibly survive. Even a year in there would be enough to turn a prisoner into a twisted, shambling mockery of a man, a mindless wreck. If he couldn't convince Fletcher that there had been a mistake, that he was the wrong man, he'd have to find a way to escape. That was the only alternative. When it came his turn to eat, the guards passed by his cell and opened the next one in line.
Hey, what about me?
One of the guards came up to the door.
Step back.
Why?
Just do it or you won't get anything to eat at all.
I put on the damn leg irons like I was supposed to.
For the last time, step back away from the door.
The kid moved back and watched as the guard shoved two thick pieces of bread between the bars and let go of them so they fell to the floor just inside the door. The kid scooped them up.
What the hell? This is all I get?
Warden's orders.
The kid sat down on the bunk and slowly ate the bread. Washing it down with water from the smaller bucket, he made the skimpy meal last as long as he could. When he finished, he leaned back against the stone wall and watched the cell grow darker as as night settled over the rugged mountains outside the prison. The torches still burned inside Hades, of course. The guards replaced them as necessary. But losing a light that had come through the mouth of the tunnel made more difference than the kid expected. Sometime during the long, lonely night, the kid dozed off. He woke shivering from the cold, wrapped the thin blanket around himself, and went back to sleep. The guards woke the prisoners early, before dawn, and started taking them out for morning chow. The routine was the same. Trustees brought in wooden bowls and pots of what looked like oatmeal. The prisoners were taken out a dozen at a time to eat. Once again, the guards skipped the kid's cell. He got a single piece of bread shoved through the barred window. The midday meal was more of the same. It was only a matter of time until the lack of decent food made him so weak he wouldn't be a threat to anybody. He suspected that was what Fletcher had in mind. They had to let him out eventually, the kid thought. His water bucket was almost empty, and his slops bucket was almost full. That afternoon, when the trustees came around with their carts, one of the guards unbarred and unlocked the door of the kid's cell. Then four guards, instead of the usual two, stood with rifles trained on the door.
Step out of the cell, Bledsoe.
The kid pushed the door open and hobbled out. He immediately started toward the mouth of the tunnel. He wanted some fresh air and light, and nothing was going to stop him. He had to take such short steps because of the leg irons, he began to worry that he wouldn't reach his destination in time. It would be cruel indeed if he was almost there, and the guards forced him to turn around and go back. He made it to the gates and leaned against one of them, holding on to the bars. The shadow of the cliff extended out about 20 feet. It was torture to be so close to the sunlight, yet unable to step out into it and let it wash over him.
Pretty bad, isn't it?
The unexpected voice surprised the kid, and he looked toward the prisoner who had shuffled up beside him. The man was older than him, about 40, with a lot of gray in his hair. He wasn't as gaunt as some of the other men, which meant he hadn't been there as long as they had. He had dark hollows under his eyes, the same as all the other prisoners. It didn't take long for those to form in that underground world. The kid wondered if he already had them under his eyes.
Yeah, it's bad. I wouldn't have expected I'd miss standing in the sun so much, so soon.
Yeah, they couldn't have designed this place any better if they wanted to punish us or something. I'm Carl Drake.
Morgan.
I saw them bring you in yesterday. Looked like you had a bad time of it. Fletcher rough you up some?
A little.
Oh, that bastard.
The kid pointed to the bandage around his head.
Fletcher didn't do this, though. A fella named Haggerty hit me with a pistol butt after he'd creased me in the side with a bullet.
I've heard of Haggerty. He's a bounty hunter. A good one.
I guess that depends on your point of view.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Never heard of Hellgate Prison before. How long's it been here?
It's been open about a year. Took a couple years of work before that to get it ready.
I can imagine. They had to blast out this tunnel, didn't they?
That's what I hear.
That's what they did. I can tell. I have some experience with mines.
Now me, all I know about mines is how to steal their payrolls and ore shipments.
That's why you're in here?
Well, that and some other assorted things. Most of which involved helping myself to money and gold that didn't actually belong to me.
When were you brought here?
4 months ago.
Did you know a man named Bledsoe?
Bloody Ben? Sure, I knew him.
Haggerty captured me, thinking that I'm Bledsoe. Some reason, Fletcher believes it, too. Nothing I could say would convince him I'm not Bledsoe.
But you're not Bledsoe. Yeah, there's a resemblance. You put a beard on you, and the two of you would almost be twins, but you're definitely not him.
Would you be willing to tell that to the warden, Drake?
Sure I would. You really reckon he'd believe me? Hey, if you want me to try...
No, you're right. It'd be a waste of time. I see that now.
You could get every man in here to swear you're not Bledsoe, and it wouldn't change Fletcher's mind. Once he's made it up, that's it.
Yes, but he wants me to tell him where the loot from all of Bledsoe's robberies is hidden. I can't do that. I don't have any idea.
Of course not. While he was in here, Bledsoe bragged that the only one who knew was him. I reckon that's why he busted out, so he could go and get it.
How in the world did Bledsoe manage to get out? I've looked around, and I don't see any way to escape.
Well, I can tell you...
I told you I'd settle that score with you, Drake. Get ready to pay up. In blood.
The kid and Drake swung around. One of the biggest, ugliest men the kid had ever seen stood a few feet away, his hands clenched into massive mallet-like fists. His bald head was shaped somewhat like a bullet, but it had enough lumps and depressions to show it had taken a lot of punishment over the years. He stood several inches over 6 feet, had shoulders like an ox yoke and arms like the trunks of young trees.
Friend of yours?
Not hardly.
You didn't think I'd let you get away with double-crossing me and the rest of the gang, did you?
I told you, Otto, I never double-crossed you or anybody else. I didn't have anything to do with that posse waiting for us in Ratton. Somebody else in the gang must have sold us out.
And why were you the only one that got away?
It's just luck of the draw. I tell you, I didn't do it.
If it was somebody else, why'd the law dogs arrest all of us? They would have let the one who sold us out go, wouldn't they?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe they wanted it to look good, so they put all you behind bars. They could have released the traitor later. I don't know where all the other members of the gang are now, do you?
No. I reckon they're all scattered hell west and crosswise. But I'm still mad at you, Drake.
I'm sorry you feel that way. You don't have any reason to.
The kid noticed the guards had been standing around, watching the confrontation to see how it was going to play out. If Otto had carried through on his obvious intention to attack Drake, maybe the guards would have stepped in to break up the fight. The kid didn't know about that. He wasn't sure at all they would have. For the moment, trouble seemed to have been averted by Drake's calm and reasonable responses to Otto's bluster. The guards moved closer.
All right, back to your cells now.
Prisoners began shuffling toward the open doors of their cells. Otto cast another hard, angry glance toward Drake, but didn't say anything else.
Looks like you've got an enemy in here.
Yeah, but that's nothing unusual. Bad bunch that gets sent to Hades. I'll tell you about me and Otto sometime if you're interested.
Maybe I'll see you at Chow, if they ever take me off of bread and water.
They will. Just don't cause any trouble, and eventually Fletcher will get tired of it and move on to tormenting somebody else.